Welcome to the Exam Room. I'm your host, Brian Vartabedian from 33 Charts. In this episode, I had the opportunity to sit down with Dr. Kate DeRoche, Executive Director of the Open Notes Project at the Beth Israel Deaconess Hospital in Boston. Open Notes is an international movement that's making healthcare more transparent by inviting doctors, nurses, therapists, and others to actually share their notes with patients. We discuss Open Notes as it relates to the Cures Rule, a new federal mandate requiring hospitals to share notes with patients. And in the realm of advocacy and academics, Dr. DeRoche is an absolute powerhouse. In fact, she knows more about note transparency than anyone on the planet, I suspect, and so it was amazing to draw on her insight surrounding this law and the way that it's going to change the way we interact with patients and information. I think this episode also offers a great lens on the emerging role of transparency and patient involvement in healthcare. I loved this one. I hope you enjoy it too. Dr. Kate DeRoche, welcome to the Exam Room.
Thanks. I'm so thrilled to be back.
So there's an awful lot going on, as we're going to discuss in this episode with regard to notes and transparency. And in the realm of advocacy and academics, you are certainly a powerhouse when we're talking about Open Notes, and we're lucky to have you to put some of these changes into proper context for us.
Well, thanks. It is an interesting time to be in this space of kind of research-based advocacy around this issue.
So before we kind of get into the most timely element, which is the change in law, I guess the last time I ran into you was at South by Southwest, I think in 2019, and we had an amazing panel on Open Notes. Remember that?
Yeah, that was really fun. That was great.
Yeah, and you know, one of the cool things about that was that we had that opportunity to kind of introduce the South by Southwest community to the concept of note transparency, and I think it was really well received.
I think so too, and I thought about it quite a lot afterwards, and wondered if there wasn't an element of, we were part of the tech part of South by Southwest, but we weren't selling a tech product. Mm-hmm. We were kind of selling the idea of, hey, you ought to be using this for good.
Right, right.
And so I wondered if that was part of why it was really well received too.
Yeah, you know, and it resonates with sort of the culture of South by, you know.
Right.
I mean, it's
right.
So, you know, obviously things have even changed over the course of the year, and there's more going on now. But before we jump into that, there actually are, believe it or not, and this is staggering, people who are unfamiliar with the concept of Open Notes and your project. Could you tell us a little bit about the Open Notes project?
Sure. So I'll just start by just saying there are two ways that I talk about Open Notes. The first is small n, you know, lowercase o, lowercase n, two separate words, Open Notes, which is the idea that patients have easy access to the notes that clinicians write after a visit. Mm-hmm. So that's an open note. Open Notes, the project, is, you know, capital O, capital N, all one word. And we are a philanthropically supported research initiative. We're based at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, and we have collaborators around the country, and we evaluate what happens for patients and clinicians when patients are given easy access to their open notes. And then we work to disseminate best practices.
So what's the value proposition for opening notes to a patient? There, we have after-visit summaries, right?
Right.
Where does an open note really have its value to a patient?
So when you put an after-visit summary side by side with a note, you really see where the value proposition is for the patient. Typically, an after-visit summary, unless an organization has really gone out of their way to customize it, that typically is going to include things like your name, your date of birth, your vital signs, the chief complaint that you came in for. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of it. There might be a few other pieces of information. Your BMI is probably on there. Whereas the note contains, it gives you a window. First of all, it contains really useful information like what you're supposed to do next, mm-hmm. what the plan is. It gives you insight into what your clinician is thinking. and helps patients to, when patients read their notes, they say they feel more in control of their care. They understand their medications. Some of them say they do a better job taking their medications as prescribed. They remember their care plan, remember follow-up steps. And there's also a relational benefit where patients feel like, oh, wow, I didn't realize that my doctor knew me as well as my doctor knows me. And they report feeling more trust in their clinicians after they read their notes.
And acceptance of open notes, and we'll get into the history in just a second, but physicians, you know, I always thought like on first glance that physicians would be, you know, sort of against this, but the research that you've done and advocated for through the Open Notes Project doesn't support much resistance, right?
Right. So there's generally resistance at the beginning. So, you know, we've worked with a lot of organizations as they've implemented, and things sort of follow a pattern. There's a champion or a set of champions that think we're going to do this. This is the right thing to do. Our patients need access to this information. And then there's a kind of hardcore, there can often be sort of a hardcore resistance group that's kind of underground resistance. And then there's everyone else in the middle that kind of worries, well, this might be the right thing to do, but I'm going to be overwhelmed with emails from my patients, or my patients are going to be offended by what they read in their notes. So once an organization has implemented, though, those worries tend to just dissipate because they find that this kind of tsunami of problems, phone calls, emails, upset patients, it just doesn't happen.
Right.
So then, you know, the resistance fades over time.
So if we look at the Open Notes Project and the idea of turning notes forward facing to patients, when I bring this up, people think this is kind of a new thing, but this actually has a pretty extensive history going back to 2010. Is that right?
Right. That's correct. We started as a pilot in 2010 in three organizations, one in my own, the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston, and then Geisinger in rural Pennsylvania, and Harborview Hospital, which is a safety net hospital out in Seattle. So it started in 2010 in primary care and has just grown from there. We have actually learned about it. There are a few places that were sharing notes even before then, but they were very few and far between.
So that's 240 hospital systems. If I guess putting this into sort of a, are there any other stats that we use to sort of reflect how many hospitals or what percentage of the healthcare landscape is using open notes? Because I mean, 240 sounds like a lot, but maybe it isn't, right?
Well, right. So it's, well, and it depends on what you're using. I mean, I'm going to go a little bit policy researcher here, but it depends, of course, on what you're using for a denominator. So we know there are about 3,600 acute care hospitals in the United States. So you could use that. Some of these places, though, are freestanding practices, and we know there's no database of that enumerates all the freestanding practices in the United States. It's almost impossible to do that. Then when we talk about this 240 hospital systems, what we're talking about there is, if you think about Providence Health System, right? Providence St. Joseph's, that's one health system. They do open notes. They get counted as one system in our count.
Right.
But I mean, they're all up and down the West Coast with hospitals and practices. So it's pretty, so we've stayed away from trying to get to a percentage number just because it's so tricky. And so we talk about how many, you know, the VA is one system in our data.
Right.
But every VA hospital, every VA facility shares notes. So we stay away from the percentage.
And you're probably going to get to a point, too, of course, where you're going to stop counting, right? It's kind of like how many doctors had cell phones in the 90s. It's once it reaches a point, you sort of stop.
That's right. And we're actually actively having those conversations, because if you go on our website, for a long time, we've had a map of who's sharing. And we we kind of colored the states in. Well, we had to stop just coloring them all the same color, because then we had every state. So then we tried, then we said, yeah, okay, well, you're super dark purple if you have more than 15 organizations in your state sharing, you know, to lighter shades. And, but now with the rule that we're going to talk about later, I don't know that it makes sense for us to keep counting.
Right. So, okay, take me back to 2010, or to be a fly on the wall around the conversations that happened between those three hospitals that wanted to open their notes. What were the forces at the time that made open notes happen, and why didn't they happen 5 years before that or 5 years later?
I think part of what had to happen is the technology had to be available. So if we remember that, you know, the High Tech Act had just was just rolling out at that point. Mm-hmm. There were incentives for organizations to adopt electronic health records that included a portal. So without a portal, there it's very hard to do this. You can do it on paper, but it's pretty challenging. So we needed to have the technology. The technology needed to be available. And then on top of that, had to find like-minded collaborators. Now, I'll be fully transparent here and say that in 2010, I was not part of the BI. I was at a research group. I was at a research group across town at a hospital at a competitor. And we watched this happen, saying there is no way they were going to get that. They're going to get those doctors to do this. There's no way.
Wow. So you were a skeptic, maybe?
Not that I wasn't skeptical that it was a good idea. I knew it was a good idea. But I also have spent a long time in academic medical centers and spent a long time working with doctors, and just knew that the piece that was going to be so difficult was once the technology was in place, the piece that was going to be so difficult was the culture change that needed to happen. So Tom and Jan, the co-founders of Open Notes, Tom DelBanco and Jan Walker, this rollout in 2010, that was several years coming with planning and searching out like-minded collaborators.
So the conversations maybe predated 3 or 4 years, right?
Oh, sure. Yes, definitely.
And so you talked about the technological advances that allowed this. There were also pretty substantial cultural changes happening in around patient advocacy. Is that right?
There were. At the time, I mean, there were other things going on, like I can't remember exactly the timeline, but the Google Health sort of debacle around using the billing claims to try to populate people's health records, but the sort of personal health record idea was starting to take shape.
Right. And patients were feeling more empowered, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And we're just seeing a massive explosion at the time of people's use of digital tools. I mean, Apple the iPhone came out. Mm-hmm. People had access to information. People were starting to really have access, easy access to information in a way that they really hadn't before.
So, Kate, a whole lot has changed, certainly since 2010 or since 2019 when we had our South by Southwest panel.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the time, everyone was asking the question, should we open our notes? And now the question is, how do we open our notes? And that's because of some new legislation and a broader law that I guess started in 2016 and has an arm that kicked in, that's going to kick in this November. Could you tell us a little bit about the 21st Century Cures Act and derivative laws?
Sure. So the act, the 21st Century Cures Act, was passed. It was, I believe, one of the last major pieces of legislation under the Obama administration. It was a bipartisan act, and it primarily was about biomedical innovation and research, but it had a section that dealt with interoperability. So improving, it was directing, basically directing ONC and HHS to improve interoperability or the way that data flows between providers. And then there was a line in there that said, I'm paraphrasing, but essentially patients should have access to all of their electronic data that's available in their electronic health record. So fast forward, you know, over several years of discussion about what all means and work by sort of public-private partnerships to figure out what this should look like, ONC dropped a rule last year, the draft rule, that and the piece of that rule that's important for us is around the U.S. core data for interoperability. So that is the data that has to be easily exchanged between providers and made available to patients. And in that data set are 8 different kinds of notes. So this is all new, and it includes progress notes and consultation notes and several different kinds of reports and inpatient and outpatient. It's a vast amount of data that previously had not been available to patients.
So, Kate, this is this latter part, you refer to it as the cures rule?
I call it the information blocking rule.
Okay.
I think that's how we kind of refer to it around the office, but the cures rule is also a good way to refer to it.
And so this specifically focuses on notes and studies and lab results being released, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And the 21st century Cures Act, it covers a whole lot of other stuff that, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's a lot of other things in there. But the other piece around patient access to information that I think we also want to be clear, we don't forget about is, you know, on November 2nd, organizations will have to release this data that's in the U.S. core, the U.S. CDI. They'll have to release that either through thinking just about notes, they'll either have to send the notes to the portal, or if they have a system that doesn't allow for that, they have to electronically release them in another way. Mm-hmm. But going forward, over the next couple of years, they have to get ready to allow patients to access that information, to access all of the information in their electronic health record through any third-party app of their choosing. So that's like the next stage that I want to be sure we don't forget about.
Difference between High Tech Act and the 21st Century Cures Act. Do they fall in sequence?
Well, the work that has to happen under the 21st Century Cures Act could not happen without the High Tech Act. So High Tech pushed the whole healthcare system forward in terms of getting up and ready on electronic health record systems. What High Tech did with the creation of the Meaningful Use Program is create almost like a checkbox set of requirements. Yes, we do this. No, we don't. And they had to show that they were using a certified EHR and could do these variety of different things. Where the 21st Century Cures Act, the way I think about it, the Cures Act built on High Tech by then saying, okay, we told you in High Tech that you now had to use an EHR, but now we want you to use it well. We really want you to use it so that information is flowing across the system and that patients can get to it.
This is where we start to see the value of an EHR. Remember with early on, everyone said there's no difference in outcomes. This doesn't help us. We should go back to paper, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this on November, tell me what's going to happen on November 2nd. I'll let the listeners know what's going to happen on November 2nd. We just talked about notes. It's outpatient notes that have to flip over initially. Is that right?
Well, it's everything that is in the US CDI. So that has 8 different kinds of notes, which I can pull up if you want to go over them specifically, but it's basically everything in the US CDI has to be made available.
So in terms of, I guess, and these are all outlined on the Open Notes project site, right?
Right. So we have resources on opennotes.org. There's a page, we have a specific web page that's dedicated to the 21st, to the Cures Act rule, I think. It includes information about what has to be shared, information about exceptions to what has to be shared and sort of ONC timelines for so this is going to start November 2nd, but ONC, I think recognizing that because of the pandemic and other things, places are scrambling to get ready to do this. So while they have to start on November 2nd, compliance enforcement doesn't start until next year to February.
Do you think there's any chance that the Trump administration is going to push back the flipping the switch on this, or you think it's going to go ahead on November 2nd?
I think it's going to go ahead on November 2nd. I won't be surprised if they further push back the enforcement, but this has been ONC and in some ways CMS's primary achievement over the last couple. I mean, they've been working on this throughout the last 4 years. And this is one of this idea of the free flow of information, both between providers and to patients, is central to their idea that we're going to have this flourishing market.
You know, I think that this is probably, as I've suggested previously, the biggest law that nobody's ever heard of. I think in the face of COVID, This is not getting a whole lot of attention or focus, but this is absolutely huge. And I wonder why this isn't we're not there yet, November 2nd, but I mean, why this isn't being covered more extensively in the mainstream media.
Yeah, I think that COVID is the story that ate all other healthcare stories, appropriately so. And then the COVID plus the election, I just think and the Supreme Court, I mean, there's just so much happening.
Right.
And this is a nuanced law in a lot of ways. Like you have to write about timelines and what has to be released and what doesn't. And it's not an easy story.
Right.
It doesn't surprise me that in this particular point in time, we're not getting a lot of traction. I think, you know, a year, if this had happened a year ago, we'd be getting we'd see a lot more articles in the mainstream press.
So right now, every hospital in the U.S. is working feverishly to open their notes. Could you broadly go through the sequence that a hospital has to do to open their notes? I know that's a big question, but can you boil it down to the basic steps?
Sure. So first, they have to get over the shock of the idea.
Right.
I say that kind of flippantly, but there are we've worked with a lot of chief medical information officers over the years that have been ready to do this for years and have just been waiting for this to happen. So there are some things that institutions have to figure out. So first, they just need to make sure they understand how their EHR system does this. So they all do it a little bit differently. They need to be sure they understand that. Then
that's a technical element, Kate, right? The flipping the switch.
Yeah. The technical, they need to get the technical elements squared away. Then there are some questions that they have to consider. So the places that we've been talking to, the things that they're thinking about are, do we release notes retrospectively or do we only do prospective from number second?
Uh-huh.
So that's one. How do we deal? So for places that do pediatrics, how do we deal with our adolescent population? So there are extra layers of complexity around state laws and what needs to be kept confidential for adolescents versus adults. So they need to think about that. Then they have, so those are the two primary ones. They have to understand the exceptions. There's a little bit of misconception out there, I think, that the exceptions allow for a lot of notes to be held back. And from our reading, I don't think that's true. I think ONC was pretty specific about what can be held back and what can't. So they need to be sure they understand that.
In my early discussions with peers, I would echo that I think people falsely believe that they're going to be able to use loopholes to kind of get around the law, but the law is pretty granular about just because something causes anxiety, it doesn't necessarily cause harm. And those are very different things.
Right. And then what we have been urging places to do, and I have heard from some that this is their plan. I really urge places to educate your clinicians about this and educate your patients, because we really want to get to we're going to only see a benefit from this change if patients actually use the notes, if they read them and they use them to make decisions or manage their care or help manage someone else's care. So just flipping the switch, you're creating a lot of angst for your providers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're not going to get to the benefit.
So this is where, this is when we pull in other information beyond notes. This is a little bit of a problem I have with all this. And I think a lot of our attention as healthcare systems has been on compliance around the information blocking law and all the growing pains experienced by hospitals. But I do wonder about what obligation we have to manage expectations and train patients about how to handle, you talked about notes. The broader information is even more concerning. I think there just needs to be more discussion happening in the public realm. That's where the mainstream media comes in.
I agree. There should be more discussion happening both in the mainstream media. I also think it can be happening at the individual level at the visit. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the doctor who has the conversation, but it could be the MA who says, your doctor's going to write a note after this visit. And they're probably, you might want to read it. Or the doctor could say, okay, here's what we talked about. I'm going to write a note. All of this information is going to be in the note. Please read it when you get home, or please read it before you come back to see me again. So I think that this is an educational opportunity for patients that we shouldn't waste.
We had a podcast here in the exam room with you in 2018. And one of the things that I learned that was so interesting was that not all patients really understand that their doctors record notes. Is that true?
That is true. Yes.
That's shocking to me because it seems to me so fundamental, but patients really don't quite understand that.
Right. And what we're off, what patients are going to be able to see now on the portal is that's a lot of responsibility for patients to try to understand. So,
right.
So we do have, I think there does need to be a concerted effort to educate patients about here's what's on the portal. You might want to read it. Maybe you don't want to read it, but just educate more education, I think, can only help.
Give me some feedback on this, Kate, but do all patients really want all this information? I know that we sometimes approach this from a strong patient advocacy role, e-patient Dave, give me my damn data, that sort of thing. But
yeah,
not all patients, isn't there sort of a spectrum in terms of what people want? And how do we manage that with regard to operationally from a hospital system?
That's a real challenge from an operational perspective. So there are plenty of patients who aren't interested in reading their notes and who won't take you up on the offer to log into the portal. And that's fine. For our co-founder often talks about it as sort of a new medicine, which is great for a lot of patients, but there may be a few that, like any other medicine, may not be great for all your patients. So I think framing it as a choice, you as the patient now have the choice to do this, is a way forward that it's not sort of a finger wagging kind of shaming way of thinking about it, where you patient, you need to be in control of this. And it allows patients to decide for themselves, how much do I want to know? But we should never assume that we know that they don't want to know.
Right. Okay, let's take this from after November 2nd, looking out next few months, how things might change. I know when we want to get buy-in from doctors about this, we say, well, we're not suggesting at all that medical documentation be changed or adjusted, but isn't there going to be a natural smudging of medical documentation that plays to the fact that notes are now open?
So most doctors actually say that they're really not changing much about their documentation, but there may be changes that sort of naturally happen over time. Mm-hmm. We don't have much evidence beyond, we have a little bit of survey data that suggests that they are changing the way they write about sensitive information and possibly, you know, using a little bit more partnering language or thinking about using less jargon. So those changes, I think, will happen. Those changes, I think, will happen, but they'll be kind of gradual over time.
So if we look going forward again for Open Notes and for your office, you've spent the last several years trying to reach this point. Once all the notes are open, are you guys out of business or what happens then?
So we have, that's a good question. I've been thinking about that myself.
I'm being sarcastic too here.
I know you are. So I started my career in IT, in health IT, working on, David Brailer was the office, was the national coordinator at the time. And he, and so over time have seen just many, many implementations that are not great, or sort of the promise of the electronic health record that really hasn't been realized. And I think we're going to see the same thing with the implementations around this rule, that there are some places that are going to do a great job and some places that are going to be floundering and some places that are frankly not going to do very much at all. Mm-hmm. And so we're focused on a couple of things in that area. We're focused on how do you do good implementation, what results in reading rates that are robust. And we're also focused on how can we use this in a way that helps us to push things forward. And so we're thinking about, we have a project right now where we're piloting the co-generation of notes. So patients get an email, we call it our notes, and patients get an email in advance that allows them to write the subjective portion of the note and set the agenda for the visit. And we've also tweaked that a little bit for telemedicine to help make telemedicine visits go more smoothly. So that's one area that we're very focused on. We're also learning more about this, how reading notes and using this sort of our notes style intervention can improve the safety of care. So having patients identify where there are breakdowns, you know, they read something, they were supposed to get a test, they read it in the note, they couldn't get it done, and feeding that information back through sort of an our note style intervention to improve the safety of care and the diagnostic process, the things that kind of have to happen between visits is another area. We're also really interested in how patients view what they're reading in their notes, particularly around this push to document social determinants of health, which we know are really important for treatment, but we also know patients don't necessarily understand why that information should be in their record or why they, or we have heard things like, I told the physician that in confidence, and I was very surprised to see it in the note. So kind of understanding how do we marry this greater technology with this other idea of how patients view the documentation. So how do we...
Some literacy on some level, right?
Yeah, yeah. So there's plenty left to do.
Gotcha. So yeah, you have... mind-boggling to think of where you could take this in terms of correlating this with outcomes and quality and things that we spend so much time thinking about.
Yes.
So, Kate, there must have been some visionary folks funding this project. Who are the core people who support the Open Notes project?
So our core, the original work was supported by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Peterson Center on Healthcare, the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation, and the Cambia Foundation. And we have since then also were supported by the New York State Health Foundation. They provide some support for us to help organizations in New York implement Open Notes. And we had a very generous donor who helped us set up the Open Notes Fellowship. So if any listeners are interested in a fellowship around transparency, give me a call.
So is that for physicians or patients, or who's that for?
So the Open Notes Fellowship is for clinicians or researchers who are interested in transparency.
Wow. So tell me about Open Notes and what you guys are doing right now to support the medical community leading up to this landmark transition.
So we have done a couple of things, but the primary thing that we're doing is we have announced that we're taking all your questions
right through
the month of November, through the month of October. Get in touch with us through Twitter, send us your questions with the hashtag Open Notes, and we will respond. We're also offering open office hours. So we're having our first open office hour next week with Steve O'Neill, who is our mental health specialist. We are doing a Reddit, Ask Me Anything. Well, it'll be a new experience for me. So we're reaching out in a whole bunch of ways through social media to try to answer people's questions.
No, I can tell you, as part of a system that's trying to sort this out, this is an amazing resource, and you guys know a whole lot about this, and you've transitioned so many systems or nurtured them through this adoption. And the Open Notes project site is an amazing resource. We could spend the next half hour discussing all the things you have there, but I would recommend that everyone go there and take a peek.
Thank you. We are happy to take all comers.
So, Dr. Roche, this law is really an historic step in patient access, and I think this is really going to change the way we see information and its relationship to patients. And as I suggested, I think this is a much bigger deal than people really think, and it's staggering how few health professionals really understand how this is going to impact their work, maybe because we don't exactly know at this point.
I think that's probably true. We're going to have to see how this unfolds. But we do have, we have quite a bit of data that suggests that, your patients are going to like it, and it's really not going to be a big deal for the doctor.
So maybe we should do a follow-up in 6 months and dissect the first 6 months of this law.
That sounds great. I'm happy to.
Dr. Roche, thank you for being so generous with your time. I don't think there's anyone on the planet who knows more about no transparency than you do. And given all that's happening on a national level, it's been a real privilege to have this time with you. I'll also add that you're a very calming person. I noticed that on the panel when I'm around you. I'm kind of a very soothing person to talk to. So I really appreciate that.
Oh, good. Good.
And thanks for joining us.
Okay. Thank you.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.